basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, and I believe for the first time, I'm doing this pod by myself, flying solo, as Darius is on a much-deserved vacation. And since the last pod, Austin, Sexton, and Looney's signings have all become official, and the Lakers also signed Zaire Williams. We'll touch on them a bit today, but I wanted to use today's pod as an opportunity to talk about the Lakers' team building, past, present, and future, kind of where we're going from here. As I alluded to last pod, I had a phone call at the end of last week that provided a good deal of clarity on the rationale the Lakers had for this summer and then what the near future looks like in terms of what they're looking to do. I wanted to start with sort of the natural cycle of team building. You've got four distinct stages here. You've got your asset accumulation when you're getting young players, picks, future picks, and all of that. Then those young players either develop into something good, think OKC, San Antonio. These are the core that we're going to build around. And then you make your free agent moves around that, spending your free agent money on role players. Or you cash those young players and future picks in for a star. And that then opens up the third stage, which is your championship window. And then there's a natural decline that happens as that team gets older, a little more injured, a lot more expensive usually. And how long you stay in each of these stages is dependent on how good of the decisions that you make are. And of course, there's always a lot of luck. So if you apply this cycle to the Lakers, the back part of the teens, the 2010s, were the asset accumulation stage between B.I., Lonzo, Julius Randle, D'Lo, all of the late firsts and early seconds, Caruso out of the G League. So you're talking Jordan Clarkson, Kuz, Josh Hart, Larry Nance, Zoo, Thomas Bryant, most of whom don't end up playing on the next stage, which is that championship window, because you've traded a lot of them out for different moves. And the main one is for AD, right? We trade B.I., Lonzo, and Josh plus future capital for AD, thus opening the championship window. The Lakers championship window is really open in 20 and 21, and they were trying to in 22, but they made terrible decisions, which leads to the next part of this cycle, which is the decline. You don't get some official notice that your championship window is closed. That's something that a team has to determine on their own, which leads to the question, when did the Lakers determine that the LeBron and AD era was no longer worth investing in? Some people think that it was in 2022 after they missed the playoffs, but I think it was more complex than that. In that summer, everybody knew that they needed to move Russ, but they kept him to start that season, knowing that he'd have more trade value at the deadline. So they traded him and a first to Utah for D'Lo, Vando, and Beasley, and that allowed Utah to get off of Mike Conley's contract, which is usually the value on those expirings. That was like 3 weeks after trading Kendrick Nunn in 3 seconds for Rui. And then we all know what happens next with the surprise run to the 2023 conference finals before they got swept by Denver. And that brings us to the summer of 23, which was about re-signing all their own players. You had Austin, Rui, D'Lo, and Vando all getting re-signed, and then they let Beasley and Bamba walk. And this was also the summer that they extended AD. But they had very few players under contract and only one tradable first, so they didn't really have ammunition to add to the team via trade that summer. And that's why I believe it was actually the trade deadline of 2024 where they really gave up on the LeBron and AD era. Remember, that was the year where Darvin started Torian Prince to begin the year and was doing dumb stuff like bringing Austin off the bench so Cam Reddish could start. And by the time the trade deadline came around, the Lakers were barely a 500 team. And I think it was at that point where they were like, look, we're not going to add DeJounte Murray to this at the expense of our only tradable first and become a finals contender overnight. So they stood pat at the deadline, and despite them playing really good ball once again after the deadline that year too, they end up as the 7th seed and end up losing to Denver in 5 in the first round. So from that point on, the Lakers' focus was transitioning to the next era, rather than trying to squeeze the last bits of life out of that LeBron and AD era. And they view the teams whose championship window were at a similar point right there at the beginning of the 20s, like Milwaukee, Phoenix, and the Clippers, as cautionary tales of what happens when you keep spending future assets just to keep that championship window open a little bit longer. But all you're actually doing is digging the hole deeper and pushing the next championship window further and further into the future. Now, we can debate whether or not they were right to come to that conclusion by the trade deadline of 2024, but I do think that that's where the final decision was made on that. So that gets us to the summer of 2024. Let's take a break here and come back and talk about their management of the last couple of years. The last couple seasons have been in service of getting to the next era of Lakers basketball, with this summer as their target for the meat of that to happen. But in the summer of 24, the Lakers extended LeBron with a 1+1 deal. So I'm like, why the hell are you guys offering an extension to LeBron if you've already decided to no longer invest future assets to try to make this a title contender? And the main reason is to keep the peace and preserve the value that they had in AD. If they don't offer Bron an extension, he probably opts out. Then you have a pissed off AD wondering what the hell the plan is. Then you've got Clutch raising holy hell about all of it in the media. They also didn't have their 2025 first round pick, so there's no benefit in tanking. So you combine that with the value that comes with having LeBron on the team from a business standpoint, and the benefits of him extending far outweighed the downsides, because they didn't project to have real flexibility to overhaul the team until 2026 anyway. But they weren't looking to build the next version of the team around AD either, due to a combination of his age, injury concerns, and his salary. But they did want to preserve his value so they could trade him when the right opportunity came along, and that was paid off with the Luka trade at the 2025 deadline. So from that point on, the focus became building around Luka and how to get the longest contention window with him here. But it didn't change the timeline of when they thought they could do most of that work, which was this summer. So last summer was all about finding stopgap solutions, players who could help them be as good as they could be last year, but without interfering with their plans for this summer. Hence the acquisitions of DeAndre Ayton and Marcus Smart. So that brings us finally to the summer of 2026. The Lakers very much believe that basketball in 2026 is more of a young man's game than ever before. And they also believe the acquisition of younger players extends that championship window for longer. Recently, Austin was on the Dan Patrick Show talking about this summer, and he was saying, yeah, Rob and company were in constant communication with him about what the plans were and that they really want to build a team that's not just competitive next year, but has a window of 5, 6, 7 years. I think that's a little bit long. I don't think that's really how it works in the NBA, but at the very least, all of the guys that they wanted are under contract for 3+ years with the player option for the fourth. And so that's why Marcus and Kennard aren't back and why they weren't interested in somebody like Kelly Oubre. They didn't want to spend any money on players in their 30s, and they want guys who they think could be with the team for at least the next 3 seasons, ideally. And betting on role players in their 30s is perilous, especially somebody like Marcus who comes with physical issues. And I know they felt a little bit lucky to get 62 games out of him. He's going to be 33 in the middle of this season. And so you look at all of the guys that they acquired this summer. Kessler is 24, Grimes 25, Mamu is 27, Sexton 27. They've got the interest in Kuminga, who's 23. All of those guys are younger than every rotation player who went out, with the exception of Jackson, who's 26. But everybody else is older than that. Even Rui turns 29 this season. I think that was more of, I just think they like Mamu as a player better than Rui, but they really wanted to build out their depth with youth and athleticism and guys that they think are still going to be good on the 2028-29 team, as they will be on hopefully this year's team. When you stack Adu and Cam Carr on top of that at 22 and 21 years old, then you've got like 7 guys that are 27 and younger that are new to the team or to the rotation in Adu's instance. So the next domino right now for the Lakers is Kuminga, but I don't think it's a sure thing. According to reports, him and his people like the opportunity that the Lakers present, but they want to make more money and they think they can get it in Cleveland if LeBron doesn't sign there. And from a Lakers perspective, I know they'd like Kuminga, and if I had to guess, I think they'll end up working something out with him, but I want to emphasize that that's a guess. And if it isn't Kuminga, I still think they'd adhere to that framework that I laid out earlier of pursuing younger players who they think will be just as good or better in 3 years than they are right now. Now, who that is, I can guess at a couple of alternatives, but I genuinely don't know. And if they can't find that player elsewhere, I think they just go into the season with the team basically as it is and hope that they can land that player at the deadline. Remember, Kuminga didn't sign his deal last summer until September 30th, so even if you factor in the LeBron domino, it could take some time. And to be clear, I think that if they go into the season without that starting caliber forward, that'd be a failure on their part, and I do think it'd hurt the team to start the year, but I do think they'd hold the line at a certain point. I don't think they'd just get anybody to fill that spot. But let's zoom out from Kuminga in that starting forward spot and look at where the Lakers are at over the next couple of transaction cycles. Basically, the Lakers want to add salary all the way up to the second apron in the next 12 to 18 months using trades and exceptions to get to that point. But it isn't possible to do all of that this summer. You can't go from a team that has $50 million in cap space at the start of the summer to a team that's bumping up against the second apron at the end of it. So one of their best tools to get to that is the non-taxpayer MLE next summer, but they'll need to stay below the first apron to do that. So that's why Austin took a little bit less on his contract than was initially reported. And it's also why Mamu's contract dips down in the second year a little bit. They'll also have access to the biannual exception next summer, which should begin around $5.8 million. Then on the trade front, Darius laid this out really well on the pod a little over a week ago. But as long as they're below the first apron, the Lakers can take back a good deal more salary via trade than they send out. So for example, if they traded Jaden Hardy in a sign-and-trade for Kuminga, they could give Kuminga a salary that starts at $12,250,000 in the first year, even though Hardy's salary is only $6 million. And those are the guys who are on the block for the Lakers. It's going to be the guys at the back end of the roster, aside from the young players that they like, to bring back better players at higher salaries, along with those exceptions. So we're talking about Hardy, Dalton, Vando, possibly Jake as well. One or two of them would probably go out if the Lakers signed and traded for Kuminga, and then they'd be looking to make similar types of moves with the other guys that still remained. Now, the value that these guys have to other teams are as expiring contracts, which brings me to Vando. He's the only player amongst that group who has a guaranteed contract in the 27-28 season as well. Obviously, the main point of adding salary to this team is to add as much talent to the team as you possibly can. And you can do that with less desirable players on the back of the roster if they're on expiring contracts. But if you're trading Vando this year, you probably have to attach something of value to him, which defeats the purpose of what they're trying to do in the first place. So as a result, I actually think Vando is the least likely of those players to be traded this year amongst that group. Next summer, or especially the following trade deadline, will be when he'd have the most trade value as an expiring contract. That doesn't mean that something can't pop up between now and then, but I don't think they'll be trying to quote-unquote get off of Vando's contract, because what they actually want to do is add talent. In the meantime, everybody knows where the Lakers' deficiencies are. They need more perimeter defense, and I could see Jake and Vando helping to fill that role in the short term, but it's also why they're loading up on young athletic wings with defensive ability. They have high hopes for Carr and Adu, and they just signed Zaire Williams. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if they gave Kaluma a two-way. Because if any of those guys hit, they become a big-time asset in the whole bigger team-building process. So in the short term, they're trying to sign and trade for Kuminga, which everyone knows. But in the medium term, and Kuminga would be the first step in this, they're trying to add more talent and salary using the back part of their roster in trades, and then next summer's exceptions as means to get there. My biggest concern at the moment is what the backup plan is if Kuminga doesn't hit, but broadly speaking, that's my understanding of what the plan is. So anyway, I hope this was helpful. Don't forget we've got a Summer League game tonight, which is on Amazon Prime, and I'll be back either tomorrow or Thursday to talk more Lakers, but until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tough to Albert Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James. putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.